also welcome civil society and the media and all other participants. You are welcome to the Podium Police. Maybe just to indicate to the members our program today, remember this is an unscheduled meeting, so we're scheduled in terms of two issues of public importance. The one is item one will deal with the issues that in the public domain about the SAPS leadership. That's why we requested the minister to come to the portfolio committee. That will be the first item of business. Then the second item of business, colleagues will remember just before Christmas last year, the class and the commission's report was finished in Parliament. It was tabled and referred to the committee. So we'll deal with that issue as item number two. And then the third and last item would be the program for the second term, just to get input from members and see how we can then structure our program. I'm going to first then ask the members of the portfolio committee to introduce themselves. There is a few apologies. I think there's a clashing meeting, one of the members, and there's also, I think, one or two people who are ill. But let's give first an opportunity to the members to introduce themselves, and then we'll ask the Minister of Police to introduce his delegation. Thank you.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Cindy Lamola, a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you. Ndolebo and Machero and Dinama Bijalibo and a member of our committee.
Good morning, Maurits Redlingheid, member of the committee. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Minister of Police, you are welcome to introduce your delegation.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Compliments of the new season. I'm certain that many of you have not seen this year. I would ask that the acting national commissioner, who's here as part of the delegation, introduces the rest of the delegation. Just that I do not see where they are. They might say the fact they are assuming an ambitious role of being a prime minister. That's very ambitious. So we can't even say that. But yeah, I think I'll ask them to introduce themselves.
Thanks, Minister. Chair, honorable members, I am General Patani, the acting National Police Commissioner. I am together with the Minister, joined by Lieutenant General Sherry, the Divisional Commissioner of Technology Management Services, Lieutenant General Nsia, the Divisional Commissioner of Personnel Management, and somewhere at the back, that I'll ask to come here to the front is Major General Mangale, the Acting Divisional Commissioner of Forensic Services, Major General Ngoka, the Head Forensic Science Laboratory, who must also join in here, Major General Manamela, who will also join here in front, the Head Quality Management. And we also have Major General Ravi Pillay from the Division Supply Chain Management, and Brigadier Lindy Kleinan from the Office of the Acting National Commissioner, Brigadier Mashadi Senepen from the Visible Policing Environment, and Vico from the Forensic Services Environment. And Brigadier Celine Bier, who is the spokesperson. Brigadier Hamad Mulawuti from the DPCI is also here in his capacity as a spokesperson. I think I've come up in the main the people who are here. Of course, we also have the Secretary of Police that is accompanying us. Thank you.
Delegations.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a quick inquiry as to whether the IFED was also invited to be part of this meeting. I think their interest would be important.
They were not asked specifically for this meeting, but remember they come to us in the next 2 to 3 weeks to deal with digital art. And of course we go to give them a request with regard to IFED investigations. And specifically also this investigation. So that negotiation will happen.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question is just given that this is being investigated by other organs of state and other entities, so what is the exact purpose of the meeting? Is it an information meeting? Because I'm assuming this is not in and of itself a committee inquiry into the allegations.
No, remember, there is certain items of the media reports, and of course we will get in 2 weeks' time that the report in the committee. There is criminal investigation underway and uninvestigation, but if there's any issue that relates to the leadership of SAPS that hinges on the role of the of course the confidence of the public, we've got to deal with it. We need to ask questions of these issues. Of course, we don't claim to know in detail and
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. As I think the Chair has introduced the matter, there's been quite a lot of issues in the public space relating to the alleged misconduct arising out of what the acting National Commissioner might have done and might have not done, and so on. So we are very grateful to then get this opportunity to first and foremost present the report that was never presented before. It was only tabled with the portfolio committee in early December last year, but really never had an opportunity to run the presentation of in terms of what the issues are and how those issues have been dealt with and so on. So we feel that the manner in which we want to approach this particular matter is that first and foremost, we need to all of us know what are the allegations before us and how those allegations have been dealt with from a processing point of view and whether or not is there further work, for example, arising out of the specific sort of findings and recommendations of the report, the investigation report as they dealt with before. And then, of course, we will also want to deal with the attendant kind of matters that have arisen out of the set of allegations in the investigation report. So the presentation that we've prepared, the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, is going to assist us in terms of first and foremost going through the set of allegations and what the investigation reports basically dealt with at the time. So having said so, I would ask that the Acting National Commissioner lead us in the presentation of this particular report, and then we take it on from there. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members.
Mr. Welcome, Honourable Tumbu. We're glad you're here. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks, Minister, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We will talk to the report which we volunteered to the Portfolio Committee of Police in December, which report deals with allegations which were made way back in 2012. Those allegations were made by ProCrew, including three members who call themselves whistleblowers, who are based in the Division of Forensic Services. It is for that reason, Chair, that the delegation is primarily constituted by people in the Division of Forensic Services, because that is where these allegations are. But maybe before we go into the report, we have noted the circulation of the report which we have made available, which was not circulated for the first time. We circulated it after we made a briefing to the media on the 1st of December at the Tshwane Academy. Once we did that, we made the report available, including the press statement and the presentation that was made. I must place it on record that when the report was presented, we could not, and under no circumstance will we be able to go verbatim page by page of that particular report. In our presentation, we would have made visible what the allegations were, what work has been done in investigating those allegations, including what the findings were. It is not an investigation that was conducted by the police. It is an investigation which was conducted by CPL Forensics following the appointment by the National Commissioner. An issue which is also in the report, which I think it is important that it be dealt with, emanate from a 2009 matter referred loudly to a party hosted by me with state funds. And I think we need just to go into that. And somewhere we agree that the court processes will be respected. In 2009, an allegation was made that there was a birthday party which was funded out of public funds for me, then in my capacity as the Divisional Commissioner of Personnel Management. Following the allegations, a case was opened, an investigation was conducted. Unfortunately, two people were brought before the court. They were arrested. That was my staff officer and a brigadier. Both these people, before a magistrate in Pretoria, were found not guilty and they were discharged. In actual fact, following the leading of evidence by those that had said there is a case to answer, they did not have to testify. An application was made in respect of section 714, which the magistrate granted, and thus they were found not guilty and they were discharged. I'm specifically referring to that, Chair, because it was one of those prominent matters that were featuring in the media to say people with fraud cases were not dealt with accordingly. It can't be factually correct. If people are unhappy with the outcomes of the court process, there are due processes where these matters must be ventilated. And it was proven beyond reasonable doubt that there was not a single cent that was used to fund the so-called birthday party of General Pahlane, because that was an official meeting. I thought that it is important that that is placed on record in advance. Secondly, Chair, we are not immune to investigations. We will subject ourselves to any process, which process is considered legitimate. It is not characterized by any irregularities. We will cooperate fully with competent authorities that are processing investigation. It is therefore a point to be made that we don't take kindly to a trial through the media, which has been the case. And many a times people arriving at conclusions from an uninformed perspective. We must respect the processes that are underway, and we are going to be presenting this report. The intention is not to go into the merits of what is out there and all other matters that are to be before the court. We will allow the opportunity or that process to run, and at an opportune moment we do so. Because this is a report, I'm going to ask Brigadier Plenans, is on the right-hand side of the minister, to run through the presentation, and we are ready to answer questions and account in this regard, Chair.
We will do the presentation, which is I cannot say short, but a detailed summary of the thief, of the public allegations against the acting National Commissioner, Lieutenant General Pahlane, based on the report by CPN Forensic, informed by the 2012 allegations by Pokru. Now, if we look at the table of contents, the presentation consists of four sections, the first one will be in the background, then going into the allegations, all its findings and recommendations of CPN Forensic, and then the response from the staff, a brief response. Section 3 will just indicate the disciplinary investigations also referred in the CPN report against the so-called whistleblowers. And then in section 4, we will just briefly highlight the ongoing attempts to harm the integrity of our acting national commission, Lieutenant General Kashlani. I just need to indicate that throughout the presentations, when reference is made to the ranks, that it was the ranks of those individuals at the time of the investigation or the report. Starting with the background. The background, we just reflect in the form of a timeline. On the 25th of June 2012, this is where it all started. FOCU lodged an official complaint at the Office of the National Commissioner with various allegations of corruption and mismanagement, as well as serious derogatory accusations aimed at harming the reputation of the then Divisional Commissioner for Forensic Services, General Kashlani. In the same year, 7 September, FOCRU released a media statement levelled against General Kashlani. That is also where the General came to know about these allegations. On the 10th of September, 3 days later, General Kashlani then submitted a report to the Office of the National Commissioner, calling for an independent investigation into these scornful allegations. About 6 months later, the National Commissioner appointed CPM Forensics and Accounting Services, Scott Ernest and Young, to conduct the forensic audit at a cost of $733,000 to the SACH. Almost a year later, a report from the forensic audit was completed and submitted to the Office of the National Commissioner. A little bit more than a year after that, on the 30th of April 2015 only, did the report reach the Office of General Kashlani for inputs or comments. And then on the 1st of December, like our acting national commissioner indicated, on his initiative, we held a media briefing to communicate the content of this forensic audit as well as the outcomes. And then following that, a copy of the report was submitted to the portfolio committee. Looking at the scope of the CPN investigation, just in brief, the scope of the investigation is determined by the FOCRU allegations contained in their letter dated 25 June 2012. There you can see, I'm not going to read the entire slide, that the six bullets there will indicate to you what the allegations were. I can also only indicate here that you will see in the report there's 10 official allegations against Lieutenant General Kashlani. However, it's not all the same that is listed here. It was as the arrangement with the National Commissioner at that stage. And it is stipulated as such in the report. I did refer to the disciplinary cases, and then this report details a summary of the facts which was available to CPN and the related findings at the time of the audit. And as stipulated in the report, some annexes referred to in the FOCRU letter dated June 2012 are incomplete despite several requests by CPN for further documentation. This is just a brief summary of the 10 allegations that I referred to previously. I'm not going to read through the list, and the remainder of the presentation will go into each allegation separately. Findings, recommendations, and the outcome. Looking at allegation number one, the decommissioning of the Marshall system, reference index system. The red colored paragraph indicates as stipulated by FOCRU. So you will see most of the cases, it is in inverted commas. Allegations by FOCRU, Marshall system, value at 46 million is missing. Part of the machine is sold to police officers and private people. Money was paid to these police officers, private people and companies, and then the recreational club of a private company to the amount of 10,000. Some parts of the machine are kept and used in buildings of a private company. Here the private company referred to is Vertex. And there's a suggestion by FOCRU that management responded at that stage to Parliament as if they don't know where the system is. Looking at the findings of the audit, the decision by the Deputy Director of Public Prosecution not to prosecute anybody they found to be sound. No irregularity in respect of the procurement of services for the dismantling of the Marshall system. It was found that prescribed processes was followed and adhered to by the members of the SAPS. Available evidence does not indicate any financial loss for the SAPS. The retention of the parts of the system, system by Vertex actually resulted in a saving of just of 103,000. There were two issues highlighted in the report under their findings, the conduct of the forensic science laboratory to negotiate with Vertex for a reduced quotation was irregular or not, and the other issue in Brigadier Hubert, who was then in charge of the biology section at national level, his arrangement with Vertex to keep some of the components might be in conflict with prescripts governing the disposal processes. No evidence of misconduct by any serving member was found, and the suggestion by POCU that management responded to Parliament as if they don't know where the system is was incorrect and misleading. And then the last finding in terms of allegation one by the audit team was that it tested against all evidence POCU's allegations appear to be unfounded. At the recommendation of CPN Forensics, there is to serve no purpose to pursue the matter any further as Brigadier Hubert is no longer a serving member of the SAS. Official response also submitted to the Office of the Public Protector in view of lack of evidence to substantiate allegations of misconduct against any serving member of the SAS. The allegations are deemed to be unfounded, and according to our assessment, this matter requires no further attention and can therefore be regarded as finalized. If I may, can I continue with the following allegation? Thank you, General. Allegation 2, presentation to the Parliamentary Committee on backlog of cases at the FSL. POCRU alleged that the Divisional Commissioner's presentation to the Portfolio Committee during April 2012 on the reported backlog of 182 cases is fraudulent. They allege that approximately 5,000 cases was not captured by the 23rd of April, and reference is also made in their allegation to video footage by the so-called whistleblowers allegedly taken a week after the presentation referred to, reflecting a backlog in counterfeit SA banknotes to the value of 5 million received for examination. Now, looking at the findings emanating from the forensic audit, the presence of the two bags during April 2012 was never disputed. The two SPV bags was indeed unattended to for quite some time. Statistics can be manipulated if cases are not registered on the system. No evidence was found that the Divisional Commissioner's presentation to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee during April was indeed fraudulent. No evidence found that the two bags were purposefully not registered to avoid poor performance, and the possibility of manipulation of backlog statistics by not registering cases within a reasonable time is, however, not excluded. The recommendation by CPN is that a system, they indicated that the system that was implemented during February 2013 in the question documents environment to address the instances where multiple bags with large quantities of exhibits are received from SPV or similar entities is supported. Official response, the measures implemented by SAPS to curb future recurrence of the identified shortcomings was supported by the CPN audit team. An instruction was issued by the Divisional Commissioner of Forensic Services to the question document unit to have a bilateral with the banks to arrange for these SPV cases that evidence are not piled up but are submitted to the forensic service environment for analysis more frequently to ensure the faster processing and analysis thereof. The matter is also regarded as finalized. Allegation 3, procurement irregularities, goods not delivered at the CRC, the Criminal Record Center. Looking at the allegations by POCU, not all goods purchased and paid for by the SAPS were received as expected from the supplier. The goods or the chemicals to the amount of 30 million not delivered by the supplier. Service providers, then inverted commas, get approval from the Divisional Commissioner. For example, threatening a white male brigadier in an email with dismissal if payment to the service provider was not made. If we look at the findings of the audit team, the allegation by POCU that plus minus 30 million worth of items were paid for but not delivered by the supplier is not substantiated by supporting evidence. These document only indicates that at some stage an amount of 29.7 million still had to be paid to the supplier. Popcrew's allegation, above mentioned allegation, could not be substantiated by the financial investigation done by CPM. The following part, I will just highlight the financial what was the issues that were substantiated by the financial investigation. The double payment that was found was rectified. The record of financial documents incomplete and not conducive for proper control. They also found that a number of outstanding delivery notes is of great concern, should reconciliation with the TAPS 24, our stock register, not prove delivery. Payments made should be regarded as losses and dealt with in terms of the Public Finance Management Act and the Treasury Regulation. Then the drastic escalation of expenditure within a short period is deserves investigation. Also, the increase in orders shortly before the expiry of the contract. The quality of certain chemicals and canisters supplied by the supplier seems questionable. Continuing with the findings, the needs assessment done by Brigadier Diko, who is in charge of crime scene management, recommended by General Kano and approved by General Pashwane, did not comply with the prescripts of Standing Orders Clause 2. Brigadier Diko did not consult with the end users in respect of the needs when ordering and distributing stock. His explanation that increase in orders was to address the depletion in 2010 does not seem entirely correct. General Pashlani centralized delivery of chemicals to exercise better control since the supplier's invoice system was obviously flawed. This system did, however, hold certain risks for the TAPS. The supplier benefited from VAT inclusive prices without being registered for VAT and without having paid such VAT over to SARS. And the last finding in terms of allegation 3 is that it appears that there may have been collusion between Crime Tech Laboratories and Criminalistic. With regards to contract RT152-2011, if both bidded for RT152-2013, there may have been collusion and declaration of the declarations of interest may be false. Now, looking at the recommendations of CPM, they recommended that a detailed audit should be done on the outstanding delivery notes, invoices, comparison of orders, the payments, and then the SAP 24 registers, and it should also then include the determination whether a credit note, which reflected on the system at the time of the audit, was indeed converted into real value for the department. The needs assessment system, in accordance with the prescripts that standing orders for two, should be implemented in collaboration with demand management. And should include the inputs from the provincial head, CR and CSM, as well as the local criminal record centers. Where losses occur as a result of chemicals that expire because of overstocking, then investigations in terms of the PFMA and Treasury regulations should be done. A proper independent scientific testing of samples of chemicals in the criminal record center and local criminal record center stores of the crime scene laboratory should be done to ascertain whether whether product supplied was indeed of inferior quality. Issues regarding the prima facie VAT irregularities submitted by the supplier should be reported to SARS for further investigation and action. And then the possible collusion between crime tech laboratories and criminalistics, the prima facie misrepresentation by them, the two companies, and the irregularities committed with regards to VAT should be reported to National Treasury for consideration. Now, if we can, that was the recommendations. If we go to the official response or the outcome, a range of investigations was indeed summoned by the Divisional Commission of Forensic Services, General Pashlane, in respect of the allegations around the consumables of the criminal record centers and local criminal record centers. An audit was done on the outstanding delivery notes, the invoices, as well as the credit note in 2012 already. And the audits were conducted looking at the orders, the delivery notes, the invoices, the payments were consolidated And I can also confirm today that that credit note referred to in the TPN report was indeed converted into real value, and evidence in that regard is also available. Procurement and delivery of chemicals. Crantec was the supplier. Crantec was contracted by National Treasury. Contract reference RC152/2010. For the supply and delivery of the photographic, micrographic, reproduction material, storage devices, chemicals, and powders for the development of fingerprints for photographic purposes on evidence to the state. So it's all departments, not only to the SAPA. The contract period was from December to 2013, and it's been renewed 6/29/2011/2013. In compliance with the procurement prescripts, I'm going to refer to the CR and CSM when I talk criminal record and crime scene management. The CR and CSM environment procured chemicals from Crantec, which as per arrangement with the supplier was delivered at a central point, which is the Loctec store in Pretoria. And then the consumables were redistributed from there to the end users as provided for in the RC152 contract. Now, the reason for the delivery at the central point was to manage the supply and distribution informed by the need of the end users, and then also to ensure that we can check the stock to ensure that it is received in good order and has not expired. The submission of the acknowledgement of the receipt there and then, and the processing of payments within 30 days of receipt of the valid invoice. Continuing with our official response, so looking at the procurement and delivery of the chemicals, there is no evidence that expired chemicals were delivered and received in Pretoria. When the reference are made to these alleged expired chemicals, you would find that it would have expired whilst in the stores of the respective end users, talking about the local criminal record centres in the provinces, because of, amongst others, poor stock level management, which is a given fact. Processing of bids for supply and delivery of fingerprint powders, powder suspensions, fingerprint brushes, tape lifters, and other fingerprint consumables to SAPS. Precautionary measures were taken to make compulsory a compliance certificate of analysis and a material safety data sheet, in short referred to as the MSDS, for every batch of chemicals supplied in accordance with the relevant legislative requirements. We approached both the CSIR and the SABS to assist in the testing of the so-called expired chemicals. However, they could not assist due to the MSDS certificate and the certificate of compliance not being available, as it was not a requirement in the contract at that stage. However, the Division of Forensic Services then embarked on our own study to establish the effectiveness of the so-called expired chemicals in forensic processing to ensure that we are not contravening any standards. In the testing of the expired chemicals, emanated from discussions during a performance review session, which was conducted quarterly and initiated by Lieutenant General Pashlani to ensure accountability by all the managers within the division. During one of these review sessions, concerns were raised with regards to large quantities of expired chemicals in crime scene laboratories and local criminal record centres. The crime scene laboratory technicians also then preferred to use the chemicals that they called it the expired versus the valid, which is not the right terminology, but for the purposes of the presentation and for clear understanding, I'm going to call it that. The indication was that those where the due date or the expiry date already lapsed with inverted commas worked better as those the new ones. That was the allegations. However, it's an allegation, and obviously as management instruction was given that allegations by the technician had to be validated, and we need to have a scientific decision in terms of that. So it was only allegations, that's why I'm saying those allegations, but then the actual testing took place. Now, two sets of chemical, subsequent to these discussions, we established two teams to run tests on all the premixed chemical reagents in the crime scene laboratory environment. The two groups from both the Peter Maritzburg and Kroonstad, and then two sets of chemical reagents were utilized. And then the chemical reagents in the crime scene laboratories didn't have a certificate of analysis, NSDS batch numbers and manufacturing date, as it wasn't a bid requirement, but the expiry dates were well labeled on the outside of the boxes. The methodology that was used during the testing of this project, the testing of the chemicals in this project was indeed in line with the UK Home Office Manual, second edition of 2005. The findings of these tests, the majority of the chemical reagents had produced comparable results. Contrast of results was almost comparable, in some cases, superiority of the expired ones versus the valid ones based on the observations through the naked eye. The chemical reagents were referred to the SWS and CSIR for further analysis and validation. However, again, they could not assist us because they were looking for the certificate of analysis, material safety data sheet, and then the batch numbers and manufacturing dates. Going to the reported incidents associated with the aerospray canisters and the that exploded or leaked, that links with a finding to the allegedly inferior products provided by the supplier. A number of incidents were indeed reported where aerospray canisters exploded and or leaked while in use on the crime scene, in transit or in storage. The incident was reported to quality management and the criminal record and crime scene management environment. It was investigated internally as required by the Occupational Health and Safety Act by visiting the site where the incident occurred, interviewing the affected members as well as the witnesses to the incident. The aerospray canisters were subjected then to laboratory tests and conducted by experts from Forensic Science Laboratory, the subsection Mechanical Engineering, as well as our Chemistry section. Continuing with the reported incidents with the aerospray canisters, relevant literature and check documentation such as the MSDS were sourced from the supplier. After identifying that the aerospray canisters were supplied without the necessary MSDS, the factory visit was arranged to inspect the production and the packaging process of the canisters, and on the 5th of June 2014, a team consisting of quality management and quality management visited the factory, alleged to have been involved with production and the packaging of the aerospray canisters. And as part of a preventative measure to curb the reoccurrence of such incidents, 1,092 heat resistant bags were acquired in February of 2012 to aid in controlling the temperature variance of the aerosol spray canisters. A decision on the way forward was taken that any chemical and reagent procurement, a detailed specification must be compiled to include the chemical composition, the concentration, legislative and packaging requirements to ensure 100% supplier and product compliance. No chemical shall be accepted for delivery without a compliant MSDS certificate of analysis per batch or lot number supplied. Recommendations in respect of the in respect of rectifying identified administrative shortcomings were noted, and measures implemented by the FSR management to curb future recurrence. That now refers to the findings of the CPN team in terms of the number of outstanding delivery notes, the administration processes within the supply chain management environment. Then the recommendations regarding the reporting of the supplier to SARS and Treasury for VAT irregularities was noted, and for implementation, the SARS Division Supply Chain Management has indeed been notified for the matter, about the matter to be reported to the above-mentioned authorities, and then supply chain management processes and prescripts are strictly adhered to without deviation within the Division Forensic Services. This is stipulated here because each and every application for procurement of any goods or services submitted to Lieutenant General Pashlane, at the time the Divisional Commissioner of Forensic Services, when approved, the general would clearly state that all prescripts, supply chain and finance prescripts, must be complied with without any deviation. So the instruction is very clear on all procurement, irrespective of the supplier. Then provincial task teams were also established in 2012 by Lieutenant General Pashwani to conduct on-site inspections at the LCRCs and the crime scene laboratories to go and identify the shortcomings and also to provide support in addressing these shortcomings such as stock level management. It also includes personal visits to the local criminal record centers by General Pashwani in person. And in addition to that, the poor performing local criminal record center commanders were indeed summoned to attend our quarterly performance review sessions to come and account when it comes to poor service delivery or non-compliance to prescripts. Coming to our last slide on allegations 3, the increased payments to the suppliers, 2010, 11, and 12, 13. Got the report here with me. I did not want to repeat the CPN report in the presentation, but I will read the amount to you. The payments did incline significantly due to the increased demand of chemicals. The maintenance costs and training offered in relation to the use of the specialized equipment and the items between 2010-11 and 2011-12. And the increased need for consumables is also informed as a result of the increase in the cases reported to the forensic science, forensic services division. Here in specific, I refer to the crime scenes attended and processed. If I can just go, if you can allow me to just go to the amount referred to in the CPN report, paid to the specific supplier. In 2010-11, according to the findings of the CPN report, for the 2010-11 financial year, it was 9.7 million. Now, the concern was, why then in 2011-12 did the annual payment to the supplier increase to 33.8 million? And then in 2012-13, it was 22.9 million. Now, the reason for that is very clear. The contract in 2010-11, when the 9.7 million amount was paid to the supplier. The contract was awarded in the middle of 2010, which means that this 9.7 million basically speaks to orders for the period of about 6 months. Now, in 2011-12, the payment was indeed 33.8 million, but the orders progressively increased after the awarding of the contract, which is standardized practices within contract management. And in 2011-12, the expenditure then stabilized and the contract ended and was renewed in 2011-12. Now you will see in 2010-11, the 6 months, 9.7, yet the need becomes more pressure to produce to attend crime scenes, to effectively process those crime scenes. As the portfolio committee, you will know that in forensic services there was and still is an emphasis on crime scene, the proper processing of crime scenes. And then, as I said, the 22.9 million reflected for the 2012-13 period indeed indicates to us that there was there was a stabilization in that specific financial year. I just, for interest sake, included the improved performance by the crime scene management environment, which reflects the cases reported and attended to by crime scene management personnel. You will see that between 2010-11 and 2011-12, there was an 18.9% increase, which is actually 68,865 more crime scenes having been attended to by the environment. Then, looking at our positive rate, there was an increase of 16.5% between 2010-11 and 2011-12. And then I'm only focusing on 2011 and 2011-12 because the question was raised between the 9 million and the 33 million. Our identification rate increased by 59% between 2010-11 and 2011-12. So production and expenditure can be linked. if I can go to allegation 4, the procurement irregularity, Eastern Cape. The allegation by Parkloo then reads that a Pretoria-based official acknowledged the receipt of goods received in the Eastern Cape. Now, CPN audit team says, due to the lack of information, no further investigation was conducted. Official response from staff, since no information regarding the allegations could be provided upon request by the auditors, it can be concluded that the matter requires no further attention. Allegation number 5, human resources, the fraud case, that the acting national commissioner did refer to during his introduction. Fourth allegation that senior SAPS members attended the hearing of a fraud case against Lieutenant Colonel Mutia Pillay and former Brigadier Malebe Tema without authorization or having taken leave for that period, and that no disciplinary action was instituted against Colonel Mutia Pillay for committing fraud against the SAPS. Now, looking at the findings of the audit team, findings that the entire process by the SAPS was tainted from the start, referring to the complaints, the opening of the docket, the retaking of statements, the arrest, as well as the sourcing of the evidence. The investigating division should have informed the section head of support forensic services when the investigation was initiated and a decision was taken to prosecute. It would have been unreasonable to have expected Lieutenant General Fashlani to decide on disciplinary action as he was directly involved as a potential witness. A higher authority such as General Libya did not bring forth a final decision to resolve the matter. Any further process to institute disciplinary action had become completely mute due to time delay since the actual event, the resignation of one of the members involved, the investigation that took almost 2 years to be completed, and then the judgment of the criminal court already addressed the merits of the case, as referred to by General Fashlani earlier. But then completing the findings of the audit team, the correct procurement process was followed to secure and pay for the venue on the date in question. 3 senior members did indeed attend the court case, as the Office of the Divisional Commissioner had official interest in the outcome of the criminal case. Fox's allegation in this regard is therefore viewed as trivial and insignificant. The recommendation by CPN, there is no action to be taken against the implicated members who attended the court case. And the allegation in respect of the lack of disciplinary action against Colonel Murgia Pillay, the recommendation is that no further action should be taken. The official response by staff, the comments and recommendations in the report duly noted, since reasons for not taking disciplinary steps were accepted, this matter requires no further attention and is thus regarded as finalized. Allegation number 6 of 10, human resources irregular payments, which refers to the scarce skills allowance. Allegations by POC Group that officers Mushala and Bordi received scarce skills allowance in the present tense, received scarce skills allowance, even though they only have 3 months service. The relevant policy allegedly provides that a member must have 5 years service to qualify for such an allowance. General Shezi is receiving scarce skills allowance despite being in support services and not being regarded as an expert. Polk further alleged that administration clerk Bafana, who is actually warrant officer in Schlafen, receives the allowance despite being insufficiently qualified. Last allegation, warrant officer Ramalepe lodged a grievance because he did not receive the allowance. Looking at the findings, in terms of Mushlala, and remember, this is not the SAPS findings, it's the audit findings as reported in the audit report. Mushlala, allegation unsubstantiated, the member never received fair skills allowance. In terms of Ngoli, if provisions regulated awarding of fair skills allowance as it was in 2006 were applicable in 2011, when the member entered into the agreement, then the fair skills allowance granted would have been irregular, as the 2 criteria relating to qualifications and experience were not met. in terms of general sharing, if it is established that the category under which she performed services was not a recognized care skills category, then the investigation into possible fruitless, wasteful and irregular expenditure in terms of the PFMA treasury regulation should be done. If indeed the case, cognizance must also be taken that a willful manipulation of policy may be deducted from the fact that the care skills allowance certificate may have been manipulated. Then the last finding in this regard, Mr. Schlapper, and the allegation is unsubstantiated, the member never received care skills allowance. Looking at the two recommendations by the audit team, in terms of Ngodi, SAP should initiate investigation into possible fruitless, wasteful and irregular expenditure. And the second recommendation, in terms of General Shelly, that the SAP should also initiate an investigation into possible fruitless, wasteful and irregular expenditure. A response and outcomes from the SAPS, Mushlala. As we know, allegations are unsubstantiated. That is why it is regarded as finalized. In terms of Ngodi, an internal verification process was launched, which indicated that the employee was exposed to extensive training and development prior to resumption of his duties and was provided with extensive mentorship and upon completion of the training. He then performed specialized duties for a period of 3 years, which then qualified him for receipt of this allowance. The above action was well within the legal requirements as per directive. I'm not going to read the directive, the reference is there, and then thus the matter is regarded as finalized. In terms of General Shazi, upon assessment of the qualifications, experience, as well as the criteria of the care skills policy, this office is satisfied that the officer did qualify for the allowance. The policy requires that one or more of the criteria as per paragraph 6.1 be present for consideration of the allowance, and General Shazi, at that time a colonel, did indeed qualify, thus the matter is regarded as finalized. In terms of Warrant Officer Nshlapu, comments to the effect that POCRU's allegations are without substance are noted, and the matter is regarded as finalized. And then the grievance of Ramalete, comments to the effect that the member registered a grievance which has its own dispute resolution procedure noted and thus regarded as finalized. In terms of allegation 7, human resources irregular appointments, allegations by POCRU. Number 1, that the following members were irregularly appointed in their posts: Brigadier Moraperi, Brigadier Mulawa, Brigadier De Witt, which is me, Brigadier Feynman, Colonel Daku, Colonel van der Hammen, Lieutenant Colonel Mashabela, and Warrant Officer Bafana, again it's Mustafa. And allegation number 2, that an African female and a white female one, and I am quoting, both are brigadiers, employed at the FSL have been impregnated by the acting national commissioner. Now, I put a question mark there because at the time of the report, General Pashwani was not the acting national commissioner, and that they both have kids out of this relationship, unquote. Then the findings of the audit team in terms of Brigadier Mara Fading's appointment. Yeah, I'm instructed to say that I'm one of the brigadiers that was impregnated by the acting national. But going to the findings on a more serious note, the appointment of Brigadier Moraperi, the appointment process was appointment process irregular based on errors relating to her qualifications. This qualification now refers to the completion of the application. The incorrect procedure relevant to the absence of a panel member during the procedure and the provisions of National Instruction Form 2010 incorrectly applied in respect of her experience. The findings with regard to Brigadier Mulawa, allegations in respect of the sexual relationship unsubstantiated. The National Commissioner approved Brigadier Mulawa's appointment based on a panel's recommendation centered around equity. Technically, she qualified with regard to years' experience and her preceding rank. Brigadier Kleinon, very separate as to it. The allegation, in respect of the sexual relationship is unsubstantiated. The appointment in terms of Section 45 of the Police Act, she only served plus minus 2 years in the rank of a colonel, therefore she did not qualify for the relevant promotion to the rank of a brigadier. Colonel Daku, limited procedural information, no indication that appointment was in contradiction to the relevant prescript. However, dispute referral documentation may show otherwise. A detailed interview with the relevant person at personnel management is required before a finding can be made. Owing to the last three, Colonel van der Hammen, the allegation is without substance as the member took a lateral transfer. Lieutenant Colonel Mashabella did not apply for a post. A grievance was not related to the filling of the post, but about her subsistence allowance. Thus, the allegation in respect of her allegedly irregular appointment is deemed unfounded. In terms of warrant officer in Schlafu, Pockler's allegation is without substance. Recommendations by the CPN team. Brigadier Morapeli, appointment to be reviewed at national level. Brigadier Mulawa, allegation regarding sexual relationship unfounded, matter regarded to be finalized. And the matter relevant to her appointment to also be regarded as finalized. In terms of Brigadier De Witt, claimant, allegation regarding sexual relationship unfounded, matter to be regarded as finalized, appointment to be reviewed at national level. Colonel Daku, detailed interview with a relevant person at personnel management required to clarify this issue. Alternatively, the findings of the SSSBT be awaited and once obtained considered. Colonel van der Hammen, as indicated on the previous slide, so of the allegation by POPCU is deemed as unfounded, matter regarded as finalized. In terms of Colonel Mashabella, never applied for a post, there is no recommendation by the audit team, and Warrant Officer Nshlaku, POPCU's allegation unfounded. Now looking at the official response, in terms of Colonel Daku, due to service delivery considerations, the Divisional Commission of Forensic Services retained the service of the officer in Pretoria and filled the post in the Eastern Cape laterally. No further attention is required, the matter is regarded as finalized. Colonel van der Hammen, as indicated on the previous slide, unsubstantiated allegation regarded as finalized. In terms of Brigadier Morapedi, however, the appointment file was perused, and it was determined that the officer met the minimum requirements of the post as advertised. Proper shortlisting processes was conducted according to the relevant prescript, and the officer does possess the required qualifications and experience for the post. This office is satisfied that nothing was amiss in the process and the matter is regarded as finalized. In terms of Colonel Mashabella, the comments to the effect that this member was also one of the complainants who registered a grievance on the matter was noted. The member did not apply for any post. The matter is regarded as finalized. In terms of Nshlaku, unfounded allegation, finalized. Brigadier Mulawa, allegations of an intimate relationship between Brigadier Mulawa and General Pashlani is unfounded, and the matter is regarded as finalized. The same goes for the intimate relationship with myself. And in terms of all issues relating to the appointments were reviewed as recommended, and it can be reported that the officer was appointed in terms of the provisions of Regulation 45 of the SAPS Employment Regulations 2008. Going to allegation number 8, the theft of narcotics and rhino and a rhino from the FSL. The allegation by POPCU that numerous narcotics and a rhino horn were stolen from the FSL. It is alleged that CCTV footage has been viewed by General Pashlani showing the theft of narcotics by an ex-FSL employee who is currently in prison following his conviction of the theft of a rhino horn. The other two allegations is that no disciplinary steps were taken against the suspect, and the analyst colluded by falsely indicating that the rhino horn was that of a cow. Okay. Now, Now, the findings of the audit team, from 2007 to date, 15 cases of theft of drugs were reported to the SAPS Silverton Police Station for investigation, and 6 of the 15 cases are linked to one docket. Not enough emphasis are placed on investigation of missing exhibits when reported. No arrests made. In all cases, negligence by members who handled the exhibits, who handed the exhibits over, are of a concern. Only one case of theft of rhino horn, and that was the member from the FSL who was convicted and sentenced. The CPM forensic team then recommended that effective crime intelligence gathering project should be initiated and run at the forensic science laboratory to identify the suspects involved in the theft of drug exhibits. Due to the time lapse, it is recommended that no disciplinary action be instituted for the negligent conduct of employees. The second finding is that the storage facilities at the forensic science laboratory are inadequate. The necessary high-tech security requirements, including but not limited to an adequate CCTV system and restricted fingerprint biometric access controls to all areas, should be considered to ensure the safekeeping, storage, and destruction of such exhibits. Response, our outcomes, the matters relating to the security and the storage at the FSL was attended to already prior to the conclusion of this investigation. CCTV cameras were installed in all chemistry section laboratories and drug stores. Security officers on the level of a warrant officer were appointed for managing the security system and ensuring effective monitoring of the CCTV cameras. The cameras are monitored from the security control room on a 24-hour basis. The chemistry section laboratories, as well as relevant exhibit stores at the forensic science laboratory facility in Silverton, which is the one referred to in the forensic audit, is equipped with biometric access control. Drug stores at the supply chain management block E in Silverton is not yet equipped with a biometric access. However, CCTV cameras were already installed there. And there are continuous engagement with the SSL management to improve the security and optimize the storage facility or the storage space within the limits of the budget. Allegation number 9, human resources, disregard of organizational structure. Only a few slides to go. The allegation by POP crew post at the Criminal Record Center was full, disregarding the absence of the organizational structure. Findings of the audit team, due to lack of information provided by POP crew, no finding can be made, thus no recommendation, and the official response or the outcome, given the fact that there is a lack of substance of the allegations, the matter can only be regarded as finalized. The last allegation, reckless neglect of duty, with the CAS number that they referred to, the allegation by POP crew, that Colonel Matabula made a misrepresentation to court by alleging that it was not possible to allocate an urgent case, this is a Soshangube case, for handwriting analysis, due to a shortage of senior analysts who at that time allegedly were abroad. The findings of the audit, Colonel Matabula only came to know about the case 2 days prior to the next court date, and both experts were in France at the time. Colonel Matabula had no choice but to request postponement of the court date. But remember, these are findings of the audit team, not us, not the SAPS. The email by Colonel Ramolobe, copied to General Pashlane, appears to be a malicious attack, and processes within the question document environment are inadequate. Looking at the recommendations of the audit team, the audit of the policies and processes within the question document unit section to be conducted to identify and improve on any weaknesses and potential risks, and the last recommendation considers streamlining the overlap of duties relating to case management and case allocation. The response, as outlined in the report, the assessment of the working procedures within any specialized environment is a continuous process. The assessment of working procedures was conducted and the relevant procedure manuals compiled. Continuous processes are in place to ensure the proper service delivery to the clients of the question document environment, and the comments regarding the incorrect allegations by Parker in respect of the response to the complaints are noted, and the matter is regarded as finalized. If I can finish the presentation on the disciplinary investigation, I touch on this because it forms part of the CPN report. We didn't want to leave out any part thereof. This slide refers to the disciplinary investigations, the acts of the alleged misconduct against the so-called whistleblowers. They are being investigated for the following acts of misconduct. If you look at Warrant Officer Ramalepe, Malachi, and Ramolobe, Colonel Ramolobe, the alleged misconduct is the copying during assessment exams by external service provider. The departmental investigation was already initiated in November 2011, way before this whole timeline thing started. The current status is still pending. The members requested that the investigation be placed in abeyance pending the finalization of the CPM forensic audit. I need to mention that Lieutenant Colonel Ramalobe since resigned on the 1st of February 2016. In terms of Warrant Officer Ramalepe, the alleged misconduct, his insubordination was during a meeting with his commanders. Departmental investigation was initiated in September 2016. It's still in progress, and it can be stated that these acts of the alleged misconduct is not related to the whistleblowing. Now, just referring to the ongoing attempts to bring into disrepute the integrity of our acting National Commissioner, Lieutenant General Pashlane, there has been numerous attempts since 2012 to harm the reputation of Lieutenant General Pashlane and bring his integrity into disrepute. Repetition of allegations made by Park Crew is the same issues over and over and over again that is in the newspapers and all over social media as covered in the forensic audit by the CPM Forensics and Accounting Services. So it's not new allegations. The allegations is the same as here. And just to give you some of the media headlines. From the 7th of September, the 2 in 2012, sexual harassment and sabotage at police lab comes from the union. September 2012, corruption at forensic lab sabotages convictions. June 2013, cop versus cop in Flanders Fat. Again, August 2015, police question forensic supplies. April 2016, SAP suspends colonel who blew the whistle on Pashlane. May 2016, forensic supply firm wins City Million tax contract despite contravening tax law, as if the general awards the treasury contract. June 2016, South Africa's top cop sues union for 500 case. 7 September 2016, corruption in police lab, pop group. I thought, no, let me just stop there, but it brings out the message that we wanted to convey. And maybe just to end off our presentation with your approval, I couldn't help but just include this quote, is that wisdom is knowing the right path to take, but integrity is taking that path. I thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Let me, in closing the presentation, make some comments before the Minister say much. It has been an onslaught since 2009, same allegations over and over again. It is tiring, but that is not at all going to make us lose the focus in the way that we're supposed to be doing. On the contrary, I think it should be a reason why we must do more in ensuring that the mandate of the police is being realized in practice. There is a report. It is not a report that was concocted somewhere. It is a report that the National Commissioner had appointed the people to do the investigation. And the report is available. I can't help it if people are not happy with the outcomes of that investigation. Let me place it on record, Chair, that ordinarily when investigations are conducted against you or against the group, at some point, those that are being fingered are to be approached to get their side of the story. It was never the case. Even in the case of 2009, when there were allegations of the birthday party, at no point did anyone deem it fit to approach me or any of those that were implicated to obtain their version before they wasted the court time in that regard. Similarly, with this report which we are taking before you, at no point did anyone approach me to verify and obtain my side of the story in as far as these allegations are concerned. In actual fact, there was a correspondence from the National Commissioner's Office, which was directing us, those in forensic services, not to make an input or to be approached at all. And that applies to me, General Shelby, and the people that were implicated in the report. It is also important, Chair, to know that many of these things that are alleged, particularly in this report, are some of the reasons that made the then National Commissioner General Dwele to deploy me in forensic services. I don't even know how a marshal system looks like, because by the time I arrived there, it was nowhere. But it happens to be one of those issues that I will have mismanaged. And I think there are a number of the losses, on drugs. We initiated the lodging of those cases before and had them investigated at the stations and so on. And if the Director of Public Prosecutions makes a decision that there is no basis for follow-up, why must it be my issue? We continued every year to be answering questions around these things. The same applies to, in the report somewhere, mention is being made of a Colonel Mansani, who talks about, chemicals. For your information, the office he's managing is not even having a laboratory. So they could not have been delivery to his office because he doesn't have a laboratory. He happens to have being made part of the team that was doing inspections and evaluations. That's where, instead of him doing his work, he went and took pictures thereof and started saying expired chemicals and so on. It is the same person who's working and with Paul O'Sullivan saying allegation. He was unable to provide any substance to the allegations that were made by him during the forensic investigation. It is the very same allegations that they are running around out there with. The only new thing with those allegations is that there is now a house which is supposedly built for 8 million rand, and I'm supposed to be having vehicles to the tune of 4.3, I saw figures, 4.3 million, 4.4 million. I'm supposed to have been bought a sound system of 80,000 rand. Check. We would want to focus on our work. And as I said earlier, it is important that we cooperate with any competent authority charged with the responsibility to do investigation. I was ready to cooperate with CPN Forensics. They have produced a report. I can't have issues with that report because in any event I was not party to. Now we deal with these other allegations where a person masquerades as, on one occasion, he's a whistleblower, one occasion he's a complainant, one occasion he's a witness, he's a lead investigator. Somewhere I see he's an expert. Now, just to place it on record, check. From January last year, 2016, I started receiving emails from Paulo Solomon. In actual fact, there was an email that it was a text message where he was asking for my email address. When I saw the text, him asking for my email address, I did not respond because I was shocked that someone like him would want to work with me on anything, and I was not interested. 2-3 weeks later, I started receiving messages. One, he's saying to me, I have been reporting to General Pierre and General Sithole the conduct and corrupt practices of Lieutenant General Munu. He happens to have been the Divisional Commissioner of Defence Services. And he's saying to me, they have not taken any action, and it goes on over a period. At some point, he is now giving me deadlines, and I did not respond to any of his emails, because my view is, if you have got anything against anyone, and there is no hidden agenda, go to a police station, go and lay a charge there, it will be investigated. So, what type of a complaint is this one which is directed at me, and I get instructions from him? Suspend Munu, dismiss Munu. I'm being given deadlines. Within 14 days you must have done this. Within this period you must have done that. I thought he was out of order. I never responded to any of those. Until he found his cordial relationship with Mansami. And at some point he started saying, now I have got something against you. It's a long statement which I was sent to me and to IP. I know at some point he said, I'm going to the UK, I'm going to expose you with the Zuptas, you are part of the Zuptas, and so on. Those are the kind of communication that I've been receiving. So, Chair, up to when everything went to the media, no one officially has ever told me that you are under investigation. Until I was phoned by the builder of my house, who said to me, there were people here, and four of them, two white, two Africans. They were led by this white male who said they are investigators from IP. And the one person who was leading is Paulo Solomon. It became very suspicious when I was hearing that. I said to him, well, if there are people asking questions, provide them with answers. But I was very concerned with the involvement of this private person. At that point, no one officially had said to me that you are under investigation. The next moment, of course, the builder tells me this man was leading the interviewees, asking questions and so on. The next moment, he called me again and said, General, Paulo Solomon is back here. I am refusing him access. I can't say open for him because I don't know what his intentions are. He left. Now, it is after that second call, Chair, that I got concerned because now I'm hearing these people were at the estate where I'm living. I now call the estate manager just to check where there are people at my house, because if anyone was to go to my house, there is a security, and it is standard practice. Those are the rules of estate, that you will be called, someone will ask, will say, I'm going to the house, and for me it doesn't matter whether it's people under who are doing investigations or not. All they've said, allow them. So I'm asking, he comes back to me, the estate manager, and say, General, we're very sorry, there were four people here who said they are busy with a confidential investigation. He gives me the business card, he sends me a copy of the business card, which is of a Mashangu, one of the IP investigators, as well as the pictures of the vehicle that they were traveling in. It's a Ford sedan. When we tested the registration numbers of that vehicle, it turned out to be Paul Osorban's car, which they came through with. That day passed. I think a day or so later, he called me and said, General, there was a lady, one of those that was here, who was asking for your building plans and so forth, and he's telling me I refuse. Now, I'm saying this to tell what led to the so-called defeating the ends of justice, because it was the following week on a Tuesday that I received a call from Mr. Ntabine, who said he's an IPT official and that I'm investigating the defeating the ends of justice against you. And that was the very first official call other than the media telling me about it. The following morning, there was a journalist, Louis Peter Maber or something like that, who directs question at me, wanting to know about the investigation and the fact that I'll be doing a warning statement that day. I was surprised that that could be the case, because the person that had called me the previous day was yet to meet with me and tell me what the matter is. They came to my house, they came to the office. I think I set up a date for the 12th of December where they did not come. That is now for Nkabinde to meet with me, never came. And now in January, that's when they came to my office and said to me, defeating the ends of justice and corruption relating to the sound system. Now, I've been hearing all the time about a house, by the way, even in the emails that comes from Paul O'Sullivan, the amount escalates every time. I think when he thinks of Pashani, then there is a value that comes. Because it started 3.5 million, 4 point something million, then it was 6 million, 8 million, and 10 million were the last figures. So the guy said to me, corruption related to a sound system. And after listening to them, I said, give me the questions in writing, I'll respond. And while they were still there in my office, breaking news, the media is at my house, including one of their witnesses, who happens to have been the employee in that particular space. Breaking news, the house is being raided. But the people that were supposed to be raiding my house are still sitting with me in the office. I gave them proof of purchase. This is the thing that you're to end. Check, it is being made an 80,000 rand system. I mean, it's not only a music system or a sound system, which is there are TVs and so on. They are very clean. I give them proof in my office of the payment that was processed from me into the bank of account of Soundprint. And this guy just said to me, oh, General, you know, you guys are up there, when you are fighting, we get dragged into this. I say, this has got nothing to do with fighting with whoever. I am now showing you proof of what you were alleging. It has been given to me as a present. My driver was interviewed, the one who was with me then as a divisional commissioner of personnel services. Again, it was O'Sullivan leading. He was with Masango and a lady. And in the middle of the interview, as they go through and they are not getting the answers they are looking for, he said to him, remember, you are a white man. If you do not tell the truth, and you will lose your job, and you will not be employed anywhere. So, Chair, I'm mentioning all this to say, while we have said that we are going to cooperate with any of the competent authority to conduct investigation, it cannot be that the abuse is left unattended. It is for that reason that I'm on record as having said we are going to be instituting legal proceedings in this regard for the courts of our country to decide on the matter. We are not shaken, we will continue to do our work. I thought I must raise the emphasis on the fact that these are not new allegations. They continue to be peddled by the very same people over and over again. The shocker to me was this report when it was released as if it's a scoop coming from somewhere. While Chair, we volunteered this report to the Honourable Members of the Committee. with an understanding that this is not only a matter which is out there. October, November 2012, we were before the portfolio committee. That is after these allegations were made. And there was a commitment made that an investigation is going to be conducted. The committee asked for the feedback to be provided on this. So, when we provided the copy of the report after the briefing of the 1st of December, it was precisely to honor the commitment that was made then to say the report will be taken. I thought I was saying the following, Mr. I'm going to stop there.
Right.
Mr. Nick,
no, honorable chair, honorable members, I'm fine. I think we probably can now enter into an era of discussion pertaining to this matter. Just for your information, honorable chair, when the report refers to a major general shaking, who was also there at the time, it refers to the lady seated on the right, on the left of the. The acting national commissioner. Of course, the lady on my right is allegedly the girlfriend to the acting national commissioner here. And I was whispering to her that they produce very interesting people. I suspect. Nevertheless. Yeah, but yeah, for me, chair members, for me, is to then, listen out to the engagement and the discussion arising out of this further engagement. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister and the delegation, for the presentation. I will allow three questions for members for the first round. Three. Yeah, I see the hands. I'll take the first three, and then we will go from the Mula. Maybe just in terms of the report that was now presented, and also if you look at the committee last year, I think what's going to be essential if there's any outstanding issues still that needs to be investigated and finalized, that the portfolio committee will need a kind of summary of that in the next 2 weeks. What's outstanding? Are there any other steps flowing from this report that needs to be done? Then I want to ask the Acting National Commission two issues that's in the public domain. Because good corporate governance, I must ask you this, and from the Portfolio Committee, we've got the responsibility to ask you something like that. First is, it was reported in the public domain that you were given a vehicle as a sponsorship by a businessman. I just want to know, in terms of that, was that declared?
And thank you for your presentation. Minister, will you please explain who is this Paul Osunobe? My second question, this forensic report was there since 2012. Why now is out? And why is the suspended NASCOM kept the forensic report under arrest for more than a year? My third question, acting national commissioner, you said you are going to take this matter to court in the public domain. Are you prepared to do it or what? Thank you, Chairperson. My question is that we have this private investigator, and I'd like to ask to get from the minister, because he's the leader of this group, do you have any law or act that allows a private investigator to work within the institute that is under government? Because I see this private investigator going hand in hand with IP, using IP stuff, blah, blah, blah. So can you please put it straight to us if there is any written law or act that allows private people to use state resources? Secondly, I'd like to ask this from the ex-national commissioner. Yes, you've been cleared out of this mess of sex relationship with so-and-so. And to me, I take it as defamation of character. And what I'd like to know from you, what have you done so far? Or you just leave it as is because you are a pastor, maybe? I don't know. Just clarify me. I'm worried because this thing of some elements who want to discredit the leadership of this department, bringing down the government, I don't like it. Because it's like we do not see what is happening. And we are very much aware of the serpent I once talked about, who it is today, because of the discussions that we are having here. So please come to my rescue and answer my question so that I rest on a comfort plane. So.
Well, thank you, Honourable Chairman. May I just start by also thanking both the Minister and the Acting National Commissioner to coming forward and present this report and be frank as possible about what has happened. I think that's a good sign that we need to acknowledge. And I know that National Commissioner, you did say that this makes you tired of these allegations. And I understand what you mean when you say so. But to comfort you, I think after all these allegations and cooling down, you'll come on the other side as a better person. It can only make you strong. It cannot break you, the allegation. Remember that it's always saying that the tallest tree gets the most weight. So you won't get the weight. but to my key questions, so if I may. The first one, which is a small question, the whistleblower issues and what they said and what has been found not necessarily to be founded, and later some cases of misconduct of some sort, that can also be construed as retaliation. How do you respond to that? Kind of perception of retaliation, which is directed at the whistleblowers. The next one is this issue about a whole range of tax matters that were supposed to be reported to Treasury, about certain things, non-compliance, and just to find out from the Acting National Commissioner whether that action has already been taken with respect to reporting those violations that needed to be attended to. And the last one, in this whole realm of allegations. And I do think that it's also part of what Paul O'Sullivan or any other associate has made, this allegation that has found themselves into the media around the house and around all the construction of the house and payment of the house and so on. This allegation, I think that has to be dealt with because it does gravitate towards the issue about poker legislation or the whole thing that deals with money and money laundering. This allegation that was made to the media that in the payment of the construction of the house, the national or anti-national commissioner now and not the division before, was the payment was in cash, or the, to be specific of the allegation, there was an allegation that there was cash stuck in the boot of the car in the bag, driven to the house to pay the contractor to the value of 700,000. I think these are matters that need to be heard, clarified, put to rest if there has been something like that. Then can at least the committee be put at ease that there has not been something like that. Still have the question for which you.
Thank you.
No, those are much compliments. I must say compliments of the new system in a way for quite some time. And there's also a national commissioner for the very, very comprehensive presentation. So I must say, Chairperson, to me, you know, it takes me back to say, as I was at home, I was listening, I was following very strictly the developments in the SIPC board, and then I said, it will also be important that we start criticizing our oversight work as the committee on such a very crucial body that presides over security of our country, the police. We will need to be somehow firm and unshaken and even move away from narrow factional or also narrow partisan kind of accusation when it comes to the issues that come to affect or threaten the security of our country. The reason why I think my own personal experience when I was coming down here to get some information, I will present some kind of written submission to you, Chairperson, during the course of the month, because these things to me seem to be somehow interlinked. And as a proud citizen of the country, it would be very, very, very worrying to me, even only if national sovereignty of the country is undermined. These very same people called Osunibelo, what? It is still fresh in our minds how Akioti was killed in order to silence him, not to tell the truth about their operations in the country, which at the moment I'm not even trying to venture into that, but I think this very same name has a particular role to play in that particular thing. And this kind of a broad attack to the using some forms of stakeholders that are quite central within the policy, which is focused. I am reminded, Chairperson, of the calls that were made by POPCRU when the previous national commissioner had to be suspended. The outright attack by POPCRU to say that disregarding even the souls of the people who were massacred in that Marikani, and the Pope crew attacking the move to suspend the previous national commission. And you get this also now driving a kind of broad deadly campaign against the acting national commissioner, of which then at the end it will then bring this question to say, in South Africa we know that there is a national question that still needs to be addressed of empowering Africans, not to say foolishly or blindly, or dispensing some kind of patronage. But now you get it at the center of this, these drug lords who want to entrench themselves at the center of this whole thing. I think maybe, if at all through your permission, Chairperson, a body like, a structure like what SABC board, or on fitness of an SABC board, not necessarily fitness of whoever, but to look into this thing broadly, with even the intelligence organs of our country coming together to help us here, it will help us to be able to come to a conclusion of what is it that is actually involved here. I am very much worried because if you listen to what the acting national commissioner is saying, and the pressure that you get from this man, O'Sullivan, keeping headlines to the acting national commission, and you take into account how Akliotti was killed, when Akliotti had captured so many members even within the ruling party, and how he was silenced, why he was silenced, probably, only God knows what was to be said by Akliotti if he was not killed. That was going to take us closer to the reality of political dimensions in our country. Now, that's why then I took into account these things to say, even only if, as this committee, we cannot actually then take into account, we are from the Eastern Cape oversight. The attack on General Shenzi, for example, that is, the accounting of the developments on the technological side of that, I am not a police officer, but you are clear that you are talking to an officer with a good grounding on the technological side. Now you get these allegations that no, that person is not supposed to be a specialist in the field and all that. I am raising these things because at the end of the day, in South Africa today, it is very clear that particularly we, as the majority as Africans, we are being set up against one another in a very, very, very terrible way, using at times our partisanship, which I dare say when Dr. Semmes came to the conclusion to say our tribal differences were seen as a factor that disunited us against the common broad enemy in the past. Today it will be our different partisanship that is actually at the center of our disunity and actually then making us victims or common victims of the very main forces that once colonized or oppressed us as the people, not as partisans. Then these things, then I'm raising these things, Chairperson, because at the end of the day, the commander of the police is no longer going to focus on the core functions of strengthening the arms of policing in our country, but will be expected to defend himself now and again, and the media being primed against that. And that is why then when people in America were saying, no, Trump, I then said, if Trump is saying he's going to demobilize you or disengage you on NATO, what are you doing which is good with your NATO in destroying other nations of the world? So I am raising these things because we need to be very, very open-minded as this committee to say, what are the issues that have attracted this kind of an attack on the acting national commission? Why POCRO is beginning to raise issues that had to be raised with the outgoing commission or the outgoing commission in order to investigate the subordinate? Why now? And why are the state organs are actually then cooperating with this particular individual whom I dare say, even right now, a senior public servant has actually resigned and joining forces with these particular forces. At the end of the day, Comrade Kristani was assassinated through the conglomeration of the foreign forces that had an interest in our country. And at the same time, with us here as this committee, I don't really think that we can just simply say, no, Commissioner, take these people to court, sue them and all that. Because at the end of the day, tomorrow we are going to be told that the Commissioner, the National Commissioner, is actually found to be missing in action. The question is, what are we going to do as this committee? I'm just ending, Chairperson. What are we going to do as this committee to actually launch a sober-minded approach that will investigate all these allegations, probably come up even to this committee of ours, so that we are able to actually then unearth and unmask these forces, and then we will then be able to get an answer from there. But even only if we can deal it ad hoc like this, I'm afraid we will find ourselves assisting these forces that want to use a serious stratcom-like kind of disinformation to disengage us from our key objective. Thanks. But then lastly, Chairperson, I'm sorry. I am very much worried about the factions taking place within the ruling party. Because these factions actually find expression in all these things that are happening. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm surprised that Honorable Mchonga didn't take this back all the way to the Bolshevik Revolution and other historical events. I think we have had countless engagements with POPCRU in this committee, and I think that I at least have made my opinion clear about what they're doing with the police, the role that they're playing. There are some serious concerns around that. So I don't want to go into that again, and I also don't want to, first I want to thank the Acting National Police Commissioner and the team for the briefing or for the information. I think it always helps to get as much information as possible, especially if these stories are being around. So I don't want to go into the merits of the case. I think that is not for this committee to do, or for me as a member. But I do want to talk a little bit about the processes that I see that have been followed. In one instance, which has already been raised. So the process, and also not bogeyman conspiracy theories about trying to overthrow the state. I think it's more important to focus on this particular issue. I think we all agree that any wrongdoing must be investigated. I don't think that's anything that we have any dispute over. And I also think it's fair to say that in this case, given that it's allegations against the police, that it is the Independent Police Investigative Directorate that should do so. We should also obviously remember the independence of the IPED and also the recent Constitutional Court judgment to this effect. But I'd like to echo or to add on to what my colleagues have said. I also have questions about the involvement of Paul O'Sullivan. His reputation is quite well known in the media as a maverick, and he has some interesting tactics that he employs. And I want to know how he is involved in the IPED. It's probably better to ask the executive director or the IPED when they come to us next what the story is here. But I want to specifically refer to the Act, the IPED Act, which says, granted, the executive director can employ investigators, that is his job, but that they must be subject to a screening process prescribed by the minister, which generally, as far as I know, in the police and in other state organs, is the State Security Agency or Crime Intelligence. So I have questions about whether this has been done or not. The minister may be able to express himself on that, but I think the bulk of the questions around Paul O'Sullivan is perhaps better asked to the executive director, or even by this committee, seeing that he's doing police work, apparently, to summon him here to come and explain his role in all of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I want to start with a point the Acting Commissioner made, where she was quite correct to point out that he did break the story about the CPN reports with his press conference in December last year. My difficulty in terms of that background is that at the press conference, the Acting Commissioner only presented an outline of the reports, and it was given in fairly broad brushstrokes. just outlining the allegations and the findings or outcomes. And so the way it was presented created the impression that implicated parties had been exonerated. Which I see the minister getting your attention. So the meaning that was conveyed in the press conference was that there was an exoneration of implicated parties, and so everything was now sorted. And so that's why this issue has now gained new legs or new traction, because in looking at the report itself, it's clear that's not quite the case. In fact, the reports leaves one with the impression that there are still questions, and there are still doubts or questions to be answered, because in many cases innocence was not established. If you consider, I don't want to get bogged down in all the details because there's a mountain of details. I'll just cite some of them as examples. If you consider the fact that in one of the follow-up actions, if I can just find the chair very quickly, I did earmark it, which has to do with the follow-up on chemical reagents referred to the SF Bureau of Standards and CSIR, the conclusion of that was that the project reached a cul-de-sac. Now, that is inconclusive place to arrive at. And you see that sort of issue being repeated. So my main concern is that clear answers to the questions must still be found. And then obviously, as my colleague, the Honourable Ruthing, has mentioned, accountability must be enforced where there's been any wrongdoing or misconduct found. And that's why, from our part, our suggested way forward is that this report should form part of the ongoing IPED investigation, because that would be a relevant input so that we can at least establish which allegations are truly unfounded and where there is substance to any of the others. Because, Chair, even if you consider the issue of the Section 174 discharge from the courts that the Acting Commissioner mentioned, the Section 174 discharge does not mean that there's been a weighing of all the evidence and you've now arrived at a considered judicial outcome. It means that the prosecutor was unable to present a case, and so the presiding officer says that on that basis they cannot proceed or arrive at a legal finding. Now, that's not the establishment of innocence. That is saying we cannot conduct a fair and objective assessment process that arrives at a finding that is beyond reasonable doubt. So this is, when you sort of dig a bit deeper and you scratch the surface, there's still the questions that remain. And the concern from my side is that we need to clear the cloud of doubts that is gathering above the head of the top SAF leadership and in some instances regarding the acting commissioner. So I'll come to my three questions now. In terms of some of the issues in the CPN report, and this is just to make the points or to demonstrate how questions arise from the reports as opposed to being conclusively and clearly answered by them. The first issue, as we saw in the presentation, was on the allegation concerning Brigadier Murabedi. Now, the finding, the forensic finding by the report itself, was that the appointment process was irregular. I think that's very ambiguous, quite straightforward. But the official response, once the SAFs had done their own assessments of the issue, was far perused, and the SAPS determines that in fact the officer met the requirements and therefore the appointment was not irregular. Now that already sets up
question is that if a forensic finding says one thing and the official response from the SAPS is contradicting that, the question at least comes up is, you know, is there a cover-up? Is there, you know, what's the weight that we can afford to the contradictory finding by the SAPS, given that it would be in their interest not to be found to be in the wrong. And so that's the first question I would like to ask is how do we arrive at that contradictory position? My second question relates to, again, another example. There was the allegation around, let's get the rank right here, the surname was Nkodi. Here we go. Yeah, it was the allegation around the regular payments. Now, the official response from the SEPs states that the verification shows that basically criteria were met, boxes were ticked. But then the question I have is that the directive that is cited as being the policy basis for deeming this to be correct is dated 2016-11-13. Now, I just want to check if that is firstly correct, and if it is, it sounds like there's a retrospective application of such a directive if it only came into being in 2016, or if I'm misreading somehow the code for that directive. So I just want to get clarity on how that directive dated in 2016 applies to a case of allegations stemming from about 4 or 5 years prior to that. And then my third question, Chair, is obviously this report is the past. And there are still questions flowing from that need to be answered. But as the Chair also alluded, there are issues raging in the present around allegations linked to the Acting Commissioner. And what adds a layer of, I suppose, intrigue, if you want to be a bit dramatic, is that the common link between the past as contained in the CPN reports and the present allegations is this company that's is a supplier to the SAPS called Crimetech. Crimetech is the link between the past and the present because they're also alleged to have been involved in aspects of the Acting Commissioner's home. Noting, important to note, that we're still working on the basis of allegations here. There aren't any facts that have been established. So, given these allegations, and it's a call that we've made before, I want to ask of the Commissioner, because he sounds confident of his innocence, and it's important to establish what the true facts are, is to ask the Commissioner directly if he would be willing to subject himself to a lifestyle audit, one that would clear the air as to whether there is any link between the allegations in this report as the past background to the current allegations. That's all for now. This round, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members and other delegates and ministerial delegation. Let's go for 10-minute break. We'll come back in 10 minutes. 12:20. Thank you for the responses for the first round.
Oh, good, how are you? I don't understand.
Any investigation. And I think would essentially assist us to get to the bottom of any particular matter and or allegations that could have been filed at any point. And I think it would also assist the ourselves at the level of an executive, the authority, for an example, to act accordingly and direct the matters at that level. So any investigation is welcome. I'm unhappy that Honourable Chong has left, because I wanted to address certain issues also to him. One of them being the fact that Pope raised a complaint, that shouldn't also be seen as a problem. If Pope had all the reason in the world to think and believe that there was something wrong at forensic services, they, as a union, interest-based a formation, for an example, they have all the right in the world to then bring to the fore those particular allegations and let the allegations be dealt with. So there shouldn't be a problem. Whether those allegations are founded or unfounded, it's a different matter altogether. But if, in their opinion, they were of the belief that indeed something was untoward and so on, we shouldn't really falter them on that. Secondly, I would also not go to the extent to which Honorable Chongo went into insofar as trying to do a co-relationship between Pope Crew and Paul Sullivan, for an example, because for me those are two distinct sort of the issues. Now, unless of course it's then proven otherwise at a later point that I may be wrong in this thing, but I do not see Pope Crew and see Paul O'Sullivan, or see Paul O'Sullivan and see Pope next thing. I just don't. Those are the issues I wanted to clarify. Honourable Member, Maguda raises the one question: who is Paul O'Sullivan? Now, I don't think I will do justice to it, except to say that he's a private investigator. I'm told he's English. I'm told, but also this country has quite a history. I think I remember the now, he has views about what he thinks Paul O'Sullivan is and so on. Precisely those views are rooted on the history of this individual and this country and some of the methods that have been there. I mean, I may not agree with him. I don't know whether he's a maverick or not. Perhaps I may not agree with him on that characterization, but that's how we characterize the thing. And so it goes. Now, I'll come back to this issue of who is the Paul O'Sullivan in a different sort of context. I think the issue has also been clarified about the question of whether or not Honorable Mazija, is there a law, for an example, that allows for private investigators to be part of state institutions and so forth. Even in the writing of that law, it doesn't advocate necessarily that a private individual is therefore part of the state institution. It doesn't call for that. It calls for a different approach altogether, even the next thing you step at you appear at the door of a Mr. Ramaphosa and say, because you have a brigadier in some kennel with you and a warrant officer somewhere accompanying you, and then you say, no, I'm from the South African Police Service. It's just custom. So I think it's a legal question that would have to be somewhat thoroughly and closely looked into. Now, the reason why I'm unhappy with the departure of the Honorable Ntlongo from the EFF is because largely I don't agree with him on a number of issues. But this time around certain issues, I agree with him. He says we should move away from a narrow factional approach, and I agree with that. Because at stake here is the question of our sovereignty as a country. He raises also a question about us as Africans having been pitted one against the other and so forth. That's a valid question. If he were here, I was going to ask him that. I think the fundamental question of today is who speaks for the Africans. Everybody speaks for this, speaks for that, speaks for themselves, and whatever and so forth. But who speaks for the Africans? And I think that's a fundamental question. So it's for me, it's a question that, in a sense, would require further sort of engagement, elaboration, and so forth. For now, I agree with its articulation and so forth. Now, I'm raising these issues because the bigger question that we should then be asking is, what exactly are we dealing with here? And I think it would be important that at some point the Portfolio Committee comes back to this question. What are we dealing with here? Now, in so doing, we should not then forget that much of our socio-political footprint is an upshot of colonial institutional infrastructure. Now, what is meant by this? Remember that when we were colonized, we had an invading army. As and when colonizers settled, they evolved. We then had the police. And the police became an institution of both repression and control in governing society. Now, parallel to this is an established fact, and that is the fate of the democratic outlook and the humaneness of our society, even in today's terms, is defined through the criminal justice class. So if as an ordinary South African citizen, you want to claim that you are being treated humanely and fairly, the manifestation of humanely and fairly is in terms of how the police conduct themselves in relation to the South African citizen, but how also our courts meet out, not that they meet out, say whatever, but the question of administration of justice, for instance, and other things and so on. So it's expressed at that particular level. So the fact of the matter is that you have a huge foreign interest still rooted in contracting and controlling the institutions of the criminal justice cluster, for example, the police being one of those. And we're being told directly or through proxy, and in the most sort of the arrogant kind of manner, for instance, that there has got to be this definition for the poor, the African in particular, and black people in general, and the whole question of what it means to be free and how we should be enjoying this freedom. So they give us a perspective on what this freedom should be, but also issues of good governance, economic development, and you have this, and therefore, because if we can do a trend analysis, for instance, if you want to at some point, that soon after General Lee Fibers was National Commissioner, thereafter, there has been a trend of ensuring that you do not have stability in the South African police force. You know, it's an established historical fact. It has been over the years. Now, what are we seeing? We're seeing also a situation where, now that the Glasson report is out about the suspended National Commissioner, we're seeing a similar sort of, you know, stampede and competition towards the issue of who becomes the next National Commissioner and so forth. And therefore, in the process, there's a lot of character assassination, all the negative stories that get thrown into the process, and many other institutional and process issues that are there. Now, I've spoken, Chairperson, to the issue of why I think it's critical for foreign forces, for example, to continue to have control over the institution of police and the criminal justice cluster altogether. And again, this is a historical fact. They have got to defend their ill-gotten wealth. And that's the central part. And that central part has got to be, that object, central objective has got to be advanced using, of course, these institutions, so that, amongst other things, they've got to factor in a slow pace of transformation, for example. Because under circumstances where there is instability and whatever and so it goes, you can't then talk of transformation. It's difficult. You can't then talk of positioning and repositioning an institution of policing towards the objectives of the majority of this country and so on. Now, and I think part of this problem, as we experience them, they are also part of a broader subject matter, wherein wherein the understanding that is continuously festered in the minds of the general populace is lack of trust in governance and governance institutions. For an example. So similarly here, because I want to illustrate this point a little bit, is that you can't talk of being looked after as an ordinary citizen of this country, for an example, if you have police that can't transform, if you have police that can't focus on issues of service delivery, for instance, in the most sort of focused and dedicated kind of manner. If you have police that are perceived to be fighting amongst themselves and so on, because that also is a deliberately sort of staged kind of a phenomenon of sorts and so forth. And that talks to a weakening the confidence of an ordinary South African citizen towards the institutional governance, such as police and so forth. So I then essentially agree with the question that is being raised by the honourable member from the EFF, I think Ronald Shong, about the need for us to critically beginning to look broadly into this particular issue, away from our narrow political sort of lines of thoughts, and broadly talk about the question of, is it correct that we should then be subjected to a situation where the security of our state is being undermined in different forms and from all sorts of angles and stuff. is it really correct that a situation of this particular nature should continuously be allowed to just simply happen in the manner in which it should happen? And having said so, I'm not underestimating or undermining the fact that where there is cause for the investigation to be conducted, let us conduct an investigation, establish the facts and so forth, and deal with the issues where they need to be dealt with and so forth. The problem I have is in terms of how all of this is actually being done, and the fact that even these reports that we're presenting here today, I mean, nobody hardly said anything about it in the public space before this particular meeting. It's as if it doesn't exist, and people just pick and choose out of the very same report that we tabled with Parliament as if it's a new thing. You know, so you have great education of methods that were there that we brought to the fore. I also do think that Honourable Chair, we may want, because I think there is a little bit of a similarity in what is being proposed by the Honourable Member Songo and the Honourable Member Mbele, for an example, unless I'm incorrect in that. I think there has got to be a process that perhaps looks at processing this very same report. So we've presented it. We will step away from the portfolio committee, and of course members of the portfolio committee must, in my view, deliberate over this particular report, but also make up your minds about what else would you want to have interrogated and processed, amongst other things, for that matter and so forth. So I think there is an element of convergence between the two sort of ideas that I had from the two honorable members, and it's really up to the portfolio committee in terms of how it needs to deal with it. But I think again, you know, the issue is far broader than just the issue of a forensic report, a forensic investigation report, forensic services and so on. It's far beyond that particular level. And I think it's high time that we begin to confront these particular issues head on. So there, I agree with the Honourable Mzongo. I will not be able to answer, for an example, the question of there's a question about why is this report was commissioned in 2012, and why this report comes up now. It's really difficult to answer that question, and I'll tell you why. As you can see, that the process flow does show that the report was produced within 8 or 12 months, I think. Thereafter, it was then submitted with the National Commissioner, who then sat on it for about a year, if not more than a year, and eventually the matter is then brought to General Patane in terms of briefing him about what the outcome of the report is and so forth. But then it also was just sitting there and it wasn't taken out. I wouldn't know whether there were any administrative and logical reasons as to why the report did not come out. So eventually in April, I think it's in April 2015, that then the acting national commissioner is brought on board about this, and then in 2016, when he then was acting national commissioner, we took a decision that this report needed to be made known I think the rest of the issues really, I would leave them to the acting national commissioner to respond. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
thanks, Minister. Thanks, Honourable Chair and members. I think the Minister dealt with a number of issues. I'm going to touch on those that were not dealt with. One of the things I read about is that the entire career of General Pashana was discriminated. There is no objection to that. I've got a proud track record as a member of the state. The issues we're dealing with, Honorable Chair, are issues during my time as the Divisional Commissioner of Foreign Services. And I continue to be proud to have had an opportunity to manage that environment. And if I were to go back there tomorrow, I would do so. Because the team has done exceptionally very well. In the forensic report, there is also an indication that there will have been an escalation in terms of expenditure. That escalation in terms of expenditure also goes with an improved performance of the environment in a number of areas. It happens to be during my tenure as the Divisional Commissioner of Forensic Services that the DNA Act, amongst other sources, but also the Act that regulates the taking of fingerprints and so on, particularly focusing on crime scenes. And Honorable Chair members will recall that we had to ensure that we employed more than what we had in that year. So, ordinarily, there will be a correlation between the investment as in resources, which will include your finances, your people. But what we are very grateful of is the difference that that environment has made over the years. Now, Honorable Muna asked a question on who is Paulo Solomon. The minister have responded to that issue. But I can only talk as a police person. He happened to be a suspect. He happened to be in and out of the court for a number of charges. That's not the end of it. He will continue to be before court because of his criminal conduct. I'm told, slightly so, Honorable Chair, that I am one of those that are on the list to be dealt with. Those that he dealt with, amongst others, in the late Commissioner Sidibe, he has drawn a cross and said dealt with. All of us are still coming. And I think, unfortunately, that includes my minister. We are on that list. I think it's a Hall of Fame minister. He goes to my place, and on his way out, while he's with the IP people, he's asking the security there questions that have got nothing to do with the so-called corruption. Wants to know, how many protectors do I have? Are they staying in or outside of my house? What are the registration numbers of my car, or even the official car? What times are we moving in and out? This has got nothing to do with corruption. And it is for that reason that I had an issue with my, what do you call, the maps, the drawings of my house, the plans of my house. How can those plans land in that person's hand? If these are the key questions that I've been asked. Honorable Chair, it's not only that. I will come to this question. At some point, when I'm getting all these emails, he is sending me emails of my house when it was under construction on various stages. When it was foundation,
when it was this level, when it was that level. He's showing it to me. He said, this is what we have. Now, what has that to do with climate investigators? If he indeed knew that there was corruption, why now? Why was it not raised then when that house was under construction? In one of the statements, he's saying, I have given a house number, it's in Queenswood, to say I was staying in this particular house. And he said he had checked the ownership, that is not my house. It is true, that's not my house. Because I sold my house, I rented a property while my house was under construction. So if you are renting a house, the names are not going to be changed for the period that you are renting that particular house. So, Chair, I'm trying simply to answer the question in addition to what the Minister has responded to, of who is he. I don't know him. I hear a rumor that he's a forensic investigator. But soon we'll get into that space. Honorable Chair, I'm going to start with the question. that Honorable Mbele raised for in particular reason. Honorable Mbele asked a question about reference to the report when it comes to the chemicals or the agents and things they have reached the county sector. It will be so because, one, this is very important, Chair, I do not preside over the awarding of any contract. Not then as the Divisional Commissioner for Forensic Services, not now as an acting national commission. Whence is that the contracts that you are referring to are contracts that are awarded by National Treasury following the bidding process. I don't participate at all in those contracts. Now, one of the reasons why that so-called can be said is because I think in the presentation the Brigadier mentioned the MSDS. Which should say what is the standard with which this particular product must comply. So when those contracts were awarded way before my time, the MSDS was not an issue. Therefore, by the time we went and there were these allegations about substandard chemicals and so on, we wanted to have them tested. We went to the SABS. So that we can stand up the Bureau of Standards. We went to CSIR. They want the basis on which the test could be done. There was nothing. That's why we were told there can't be any testing in this regard. So even if you were to give it to people you consider to be more competent than those that dealt with the matter, they are going to find nothing. It is following that when we started pursuing the issues around the MSDS is to say all what we do must comply to the following. And it is for that reason that, Honorable Chair, we introduced, amongst others, quality management. That's why quality management was established as a component within the forensic services environment, including the technical management capacity for us to enforce compliance, because we knew it is important when it comes to the accreditation of the work that we are doing as forensic services. And I think we have covered some ground in this area. So if the investigators who were busy here had found it in them to approach us and say we are looking for this so that we can do the testing, that information would have been made available to say this is the situation. So you can continue investigating the quality of the reagents then, but you have got no basis to measure it against. The issue, Chair, relating to Brigadier Murabedi, her appointment, I get confused at times because part of what the report says is that appointment must be reviewed at national level.
what it meant was that go into the process from beginning to end and test the allegations that are being made. While they were not able to conclude on that, we have done exactly that and said, looking at the HR processes, there is full compliance in this regard, and therefore there is no outstanding issue. We can't continue to question the appointment of this brigadier. In actual fact, Chen is one of the best performing brigadiers in that environment of question documents. Her performance rates between 95% and 100%. What makes her not competent? Just because someone was sitting somewhere in a corner and say, I don't like that person, I'm going to punch holes into her. We must announce as management. It cannot be. So, in respect of the appointment of Brigadier Morabedi, the documents are there, it's very clear in terms of processes that were followed, and we are satisfied that all which was to be done has been done. I think Honorable Chair somewhere earlier mentioned the need maybe to say what are the issues that are outstanding, which still need to be taken care of. Brigadier Morabedi's appointment is not one of them. The same applies. There was a directive in terms of the review of the claimant's appointment. In the allegation was that she was just 2 years as a kennel, therefore she did not qualify. What people did not consider is that her appointment was not through the advertisement. It was through Section 45, which did not require those years. Which have been indicated. And the report states as such, or in our response as management, we say this has been reviewed and we have found this appointment not to be irregular. Once again, had we been approached, we would have provided the information at our disposal, which would have allowed the investigators to arrive at the same conclusion as what we have arrived in following the review. Honorable Chair, the next question of Honorable Mbele is relating to Nkhodi, and maybe the question is why the 2016-11-23 policy is a reviewed policy document. Which document at a time applies, but it has a different date. All what happened is that over the years, the environment has been growing. We had to look, for example, at the new expertise that we have brought into that environment. One of them, quality management, technical management, and the crime scene aspect, to redefine the policy so that it is inclusive. But that policy is not necessarily just a policy of 2016. It is the date referred here is of the updated policy. So if you were to go to the one older than that, it is way before even, I think it's 2001, that was the old document that would have applied at a time when Nkhodi was given the allowance. Honorable Chair, on this 2016, the other question is, why must 2016 be a problem? We are in 2017 dealing with 2012 issues. Why were they not then buried at the time after all was done? The supplier link, as Honorable Mbele asked about whether I'm willing to subject myself to a lifestyle audit, I'm on record as a teacher. At the level where I am, that's what we subscribe to, that's what we will subject ourselves to. And for me to be given a top secret clearance would have meant that I've went through that process. But at any given moment, if I were to redo it, that should not be an issue. I'll ask whether these same people who say are private investigators and so on, are they willing to go through that process? Because they may not pass the test. there was an issue, and I think the minister trying to clarify, I must place it on record, Chair. We will not be sitting here and lambasting Pope Crew for human rights issues. Pope Crew is within their right. If there are issues, which issues must be raised. They happen in this instance to have been used by those who claim to be whistleblowers. I can't see Pope Crew cooperating with Paul O'Sullivan, because the same Paul O'Sullivan went and lodged criminal cases against Pope Crew. So I can't see them in one place. And for record purposes, Chair, at a point when we were going to make this report public, I have made contact with Pope Crew. I've spoken to the President and said, you know, there has been this allegation. There has been this report, which report was never released, and we are going to be releasing it. There was no difficulty in that regard. So I don't want us to leave this place with the impression that there's Paul O'Sullivan equals the Pope Crew. There are two different entities. I think Honorable Redling Ace raised an issue on the vetting. I'm simply saying that I think all those people must speak for themselves whether they have been vetted and so on, which is an issue when it comes to compliance. I'm not going to go much into Honorable Mflongo's version. The only thing is to correct and place it on record that the Glenn Abiyoti is still alive. It's not dead. Maybe it's referring to someone else. Honorable Magicha, the question relating to private investigator, I think the minister has dealt with it. On the issues related to me and my many women and children, which is an obvious thing. If I had a child with the brigadier who's white, our child would have been Kanak. And the allegation is that our child is being hidden somewhere here in the Western Cape. So now that they are here, we will go and visit their child. they are more than welcome to take pictures of us visiting our Kanak baby who is in India. But just for record purposes, Honorable Chair, this matter is a subject of litigation. I think that matter is coming up in March. I'm speaking under correction because I feel that I think I'm insulted and that I could not just be a spectator. Maybe I'm brave to be containing these issues, but I happen to be a husband and a father of children. What is it that these kids are saying when every day all these things are being said about their father? It is for that reason that I thought, let me follow a process, and it is at an advantage. Honorable Muna, on why is the report out now? The minister spoke to it, but part of the reason why we decided December to go public with this report is this: every time, there is no month which is going past that I don't receive a media inquiry on the matter. Those media inquiries, at some point, you respond and say, guys, because they say to you, we have got the leaked report. So I say, if you have the leaked report, why do you make it quite public? Write about it. They will go and just extract the allegations and throw them in there. They will not go into what the findings are on those allegations. So we then said, we are tired of responding to the very same thing. Some of them even forget. They ask the same question every time they come to you. And we then decided that let this report be released.
officially so that everyone knows it is there. But did it help? No, it did not. Because now everyone, we have a scoop. There is a CPM report which has been leaked. Leaked by who? Because now we have communicated it officially. And that's why we take it before Parliament. Whether people agree with its content or not is a different story. Do I agree? I may not necessarily say, because I was never given an opportunity to input or to respond to the issues that are in that particular report. But I accept that there was an investigation which was conducted. There is a report which was able to ventilate all the issues that were put out there. Maybe issues that were raised by the Honourable Chair. There is this relating to the service provider. Chair, if I were to be building a house and I were to be looking for an interior design, I would go the same approach because I did not contract a company which is providing services to the public. We have contracted an individual who is rendering services for which she is paid privately, not out of the public fund. It is unfortunate that it is always the impression is created that this person was instrumental in ensuring that I get the house built. By the way, interior designers come at the end of the process. The structure is already there, and so on. So when you are doing the interior things, you bring them in. On the sponsorship, I do know that the policy demands from us to declare gifts. I did not receive gifts, and therefore this was a sponsorship. The vehicle doesn't belong to me, it belongs to the dealership. The vehicle is to be returned after 18 months, after it has served the purpose that it has to serve. But if it was to be a gift, I would have been obliged to do so, which I did not do at this stage. Maybe what is outstanding, I think that Chair, we will comply with again to a request of listing out of the report the issues that we say have been outstanding so that they could be dealt with. There were issues that were raised by Honorable Ramachandran. The first one relating to whistleblowers. Remember, these people, Honorable Chair, were already facing charges of misconduct for having copied. These people are handwriting experts. They are experts. So they were undergoing a training to enhance their capabilities. Three of them, the trainer or the trainer, when he was marking their scripts, those scripts were identical, all three. If this one got the spelling wrong here, the next one gets it wrong, and so on. If this one has got the comma here, the next one got it wrong. And these are supposed to be experts. We cannot allow a situation where our credibility is being dented because of one or two individuals. We then put a process in motion to deal with that. It is when the heat was on that they jumped and said they were whistleblowing. We are now whistleblowers, corruption at forensic services. That's why they even forgot when did I become the Divisional Commissioner of Forensic Services and went to take all other issues that were there before my time and brought in and said he is responsible. So we were directed then to stop the disciplinary process because it would have been some kind of victimization or some kind of saying to them, don't open your mouth. that the report is out and whatever they were alleging was found to be baseless, unsubstantiated, and no wrongdoing on our part, it is necessary that we go back to that particular process. But there are other methods, of course, that they will continue to answer to. So this must not be mistaken to be a tit for tat of some kind. The tax matters, Honorable Chair, as rightly said earlier, the report was sanctioned by the National Commission. The report was available 2014 April. I only got to know about it 2015 April, and we released it in December 2016. And one of the things that we did, and by the way, just for the committee's information, even a company that is allegedly having fraudulent tax documents or whatever, was never approached even during the investigation to source the information to be able to test the validity of that particular allegation. So when we were communicating the report, one of the things we were to do is to make sure that it's been communicated to supply chain management so that it can be communicated to National Treasury. We will express ourselves as to where we are with that process. But I think it would have been risky for us just simply to say to Treasury, here are people that have done violated the tax laws without without having given them the opportunity to respond. But that matter will be there. I so wish, Honorable Ramatlakane, that there was a car which went there to deliver these bags of money, because I have shared with you. And I know I would have, even if it is after the effect, Minister, I would have sliced something for you. But I'm to be provided with that evidence. It's damaging. It's as if we are hooligans carrying around bags full of money, taking them to places. That's why when this person was, he went and looked at my house and evaluated it. That's how intelligent he is. He looked at it and said, this one is worth, it was built for 8 million rand. And I'm on record as having said, I have a bond with a banking institution. My bank is 3 million rand. I actually surprised myself in how I was able to build that house with the amount that I built. And I think colleagues will tell you, more and more I share with them the story of what happened with that house. Honorable Chair, I suspect that I've covered the questions that were raised. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, if there is anything urgent, you can add that further on. But my view is at this stage, coming forward, I think we can have the report in the group, but we will ask the research to put an advice to look at the report. If there's further issues from the other side perspective, we must look at the also from SAF side. If there's any issues that hasn't been dealt with, fear, misunderstanding, you might have that. And that's going to be quite straightforward. So I think there's agreement about that only there.
Thank you, Chair. No, I'm happy for the researchers to look at the reports and to come back with an analysis as they often do. I think it's just to say, obviously, the missing voice in the room is that of the IFRIT, which I did inquire about at the beginning, because would have been able to get immediate answers to some of the questions and the responses. And so it's just a request from my side, Chair, if it would be possible to have the IFRIT before the committee sooner than 15 March, so that we can not have too much of a lag time. Because then questions about the nature of the relationship between the IFRIT and Mr. O'Sullivan
in what seems to be a joint investigation, as well as the nature of the investigation into the acting commissioner. Because, I mean, really for me, the main anchor points around which all of this hinges is the fact that the acting commissioner would be aware that, you know, when a search warrant is obtained, there needs to be some fairly compelling case made before a magistrate for that to be granted and approved. And so, again, it comes back to this issue of questions and, you know, clouds of doubt, is that if the IPOD was able to obtain the search warrant for this house, what is that pointing to? What is that smoke about? And what is the fire from which it may emanate? So it's really about getting the clarity, the answers, the facts, so that we can not wallow in speculation, but have a clear basis on which to act and move forward. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. My name is I look at our draft program because I'm 15 years out of the corner. We will do that now, so we start the March.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got another two questions because I want to ask. The police or IP allowed to make the content of the docket available to the media or the party before it here to the NPA. Minister, after all these allegations against the acting national committee, do you still have trust in him?
Against yourself. trust him. I keep on saying this question. The question simply is, this report is very clear in terms of what happened, and I'm fine with that. But I've also been saying, and I said this thing to him also in his presence in one particular meeting somewhere, that suppose the report was different, and it said indeed he was involved in some criminal activities, wrongdoing, whatever, and so forth. I wouldn't have hesitated. I would have acted and subject him to a disciplinary process. Because it's the correct thing to do. If you have serious allegations facing you, so they can't be allegations of any nature, they can't just be ending somewhere mid-air like one of the highways in Cape Town. That you have allegations and allegations are not then tested in one form or the other, you must subject them to a particular process. So I was telling him that look, if this report, investigation report that we are dealing with, came to the conclusion that indeed you had violated certain prescripts, for an example, and violated some of the policies and our laws and so forth, I would have acted accordingly in regards to that. So now that the report basically clears most of the issues that were subjected to an investigation, I'm fine with that. I'm really fine with that. In the light of that, we'll continue doing what we're supposed to do. And that's basically. Thank you very much.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to close this item and then I'm going to now put 3 minutes right just for the delegation before we deal with item two. Maybe just to admit that I think we take note of the responses today. As I've said, that we will ask the resources and project advisor to look at the report, but if there's anything from SAP side that hasn't been dealt with, we need to know that in the next 2 weeks. Then in terms of ITIP is coming to us on the 15th of February for our process, and of course then we give them an opportunity to give them on the issues raised by members. So we also have that process in the next 2 weeks. So thank you very much to the Minister and the delegation. Members, we'll just allow a 3 minute break. Also very much welcome to the Chief Work of the ANC. Congratulations for the elevation to this committee.
Basically, Susanna came here to say that he's unchecking of this obligation and that
Thank you. Thank you very much, members. We won't be very long, but it's important that we are six, and unfortunately, two of we need a forum in terms of the decision. And unfortunately, some of our members, from where the other event, the Honorable the other guys, was also out. So thank you very much for the members for coming. We appreciate that. Members would like to just agree with the matter. Members would remember that in December, the day before Christmas, I received a copy of from the speaker's office, and then the matter was published on the APC the first week of Parliament. And then we sought advice from the table staff as well, from the legal services and the House chairperson, because the initial report was tabled as confidential. And in terms of Rule 189 of the new rules, there is three ways in which the report has confidential. It must be a decision by the committee, or a decision by the speaker, or House resolution. That's not an act that the chairperson can take on its own. That's why we kept the report under wraps for that process to play out. We again took advice from legal services as well as the table staff. Their view is fine, we can make it available, but there must be a decision by the committee to make it available to members, and of course, there is a public document. Maybe just in terms of process, members. Remember, the referral of the report is for noting by the committee. Remember, there's still not yet a decision by the president, so we'll have to wait that. Remember, we put it on the table for towards March, but in terms of process, there was now last week apparently a review application by the acting commissioner. So the status of the report, we also have to await the outcome of the court case. But it's important that the members get a copy. In terms of the process going forward, we can then deal with it by the March. So that is really the proposal. So if we can have a proposal from the court second, that we make the report available, then we can just do it. That's fine. Can we get a proposal? Right. Thank you. Thank you very much. So we'll ask in the committee section just to make it available to the members, and of course, to our public document. So thank you very much. This is the chief of assisting in that process. Thank you.
My honor.
Thank you. Members, if there are any other comments on the issue? Yes, you are.
Chief, just for my own records and to understand better. Would it be possible to get that legal advice or inputs in writing just before the to the members?
Yeah, I'm not, we did get it running, it was part of the emails. I mean, it's not formal opinion, but I mean, the consultant by the table staff and that was done in guidance. But I mean, that's information that's further available. I mean, discussion is like this, a different story, I think, that's what I'm trying to raise around this one.
Okay, I mean, I just wanted to say that I think the truth, as you indicated, just wrote the report. And noting the report, I think it's a matter of record that the Parliament Commission's recommendations have been implemented. And that, I think, is a process that is unfolding, that all of us have been supported. And regularly we will receive a briefing from the police department in terms of progress being made in this step. So in that context, I think I would say that let's proceed in that way.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question for clarity. Is the report as compiled by the Chatham team, would it not be a public document at any rate as we speak now? So what are we releasing? We are releasing a document that is already in the public domain.
In terms of the new website, but
thank you very much. Thank you, that has been so much assistance.
Thank you very much, Dimas. I just want to, Chief of you, welcome to go. I just want to go through the term program just to put it in the committee. Some dates that they're aware of the change program before we recommend it. Is it distributed? The program? Members, you've got a copy?
No.
Please, just make it available. Members, next week, Wednesday, 9 o'clock, we will have a briefing by CIRA on the QR recommendations. 9 o'clock next Wednesday. Then Wednesday the 15th, we will have CHP coming to us, so it's ICIT, and of course we will ask ICIT to give us a briefing on ICIT recommendations and the magistrate today. Then on the 26th of February, SAPS on the digital art implementation plan, and also the briefing by SAPS on its operations during the festive period, as well as the first two terms of crime statistics. Remember, it's not now anymore annual release, termly release. So that's going to be a vital meeting, so I just want to ask members to be present that we can see what is the trend currently in the country. On the 10th of February, consideration of the positions. Then on the 1st of March, we must keep track of what's happening with the specialized units in terms of firearms as well as drugs units. So we need to get a fallback from on the 1st of March, what's happening there. Then members will see that in the first week of this year, the white paper on safety and security and the white paper on policing was formally tabled. So we need to follow up briefing from the Secretariat, because remember we want to move as soon as possible to the SAPS Amendment Act. So that's going to be important. And then on the 15th of March, I think Honourable Ramadakani raised also the issue. We will receive our quarterly report on the Parliament Commission recommendations, where they are. And then, the 18th to the 31st of March is still up in the air. There might be a study group tour or international study tour. If we get the approval and things done, it will happen. Otherwise, we will have the Clarkson Commission, Parliament, Procurement, and of course, Management Commissions in those last 2 weeks. So, but we will advise members. I just want to get a previous members happy with the draft report. Thank you very much, honorable members. I thank you for your participation. This meeting is closed. We will see each other Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the report.